So, with a show of hands, who had a New Year's resolution? Just show of hands. Some of you? Okay. Show of hands. Who didn't? All right. So, pretty even. So, I was thinking through this, and every year around this time when I think of New Year's resolutions, I think of this song that some of you may be familiar with by the Mountain Goats called This Year. Anybody? Some of you? So, I'm going to play it for you, but... So the song's a little dated. It's from like 2006, 2007. It's going to feel dated when you hear it. But John Darnielle, he's considered one of the better storyteller songwriters, probably in the last 15, 20 years. And this song is a bit long, so I've edited it to shorten it in a couple very unelegant ways. So I just ask for the forgiveness of the editing. But just to set up the story, so he's trying to capture what it feels like as an adolescent. And you're kidnapped into the life that you're living, and you're just trying to survive this year. So check out the clip.
I broke free on a Saturday morning. I put the pedal to the floor. Headed north on Mills Avenue. And listened to the engine roar. A girl named Kathy wants a little of my time. Six cylinders underneath the hood, crashing and kicking. Ah, listen to the engine whine. I am gonna make it through this year, if it kills me. I am gonna make it through this year, if it kills me. I played video games. Scotch rich on my tongue. And then Kathy showed up and we hung out, trading swigs from the bottle, all bitter and clean, locking eyes, holding hands, twin high maintenance machines.
So when people are coming up with resolutions and new goals and doing more, I more feel like that. I just want to make it through this year, even if it kills me. People have all these goals, all these things they're doing. It makes me want to take a nap. Just want to just like lie down. And I wonder if these resolutions are helpful in our Darwinian spaces of life. And I think there's a place for it in work, in a vocation, in education, in sports. I think there's a helpful place. And I wonder if the good news is that in faith communities and in grace, maybe hard work and willpower has no currency. Maybe the good news is this, as Paul says, that we're already being completed, that he who started the good work in us is already completing it in us. I think I have the verse up there. Or as Isaiah says, that God's like this potter. He's this artist, and he's got this vision for our lives. He's already molding us and making us. Or Jesus says he's like this gardener with the green thumb, with dirt under his fingertips, and everything he touches and grows will be healthy and beautiful. And maybe the good news for us is for us, maybe in this new year, our job is just to consent to God that's already completing us, forming us, and growing us. Eugene Peterson has this quote. He has this beautiful book called The Long Walk, The Long Obedience in the Same Direction. And he says this. He said, consent does not mean doing nothing. It is not fatalistic resignation. It means going about our assigned tasks, confident that God will provide the meaning and the conclusions. It is not compelled to work away at keeping up appearances with the bogus spirituality. It is the opposite of a desperate and panicky manipulations of scurrying and worrying. And consent is not dreaming. It is not spinning an illusion or fantasy to protect us from our boredom or our pain. It means a confident, alert expectation that God will do what he said he'll do. It is imagination put into the harness of faith. It is a willingness to let God do it his way and in his time. It is the opposite of making plans that we demand that God put into effect, telling him how and when to do it. That is not consent in God, but bullying God. And he said, I pray to God. He says, my life, a prayer, is waiting for what he'll say and do. My life's on the line before God, my Lord, waiting and watching till morning, waiting and watching till morning. And so this morning, I just wanted to begin the conversation of, so what if we do have these Darwinian spaces in life and we do need to strive and grow and have goals and to do more with more willpower? But what does it mean then if we have these spaces of grace in our lives where God is already forming and completing and growing? And what does it look like then for us to consent to that? So this morning, the text in our lectionary is Christ's baptism. And I think we're going to walk through it, and maybe he shows us something about consent. So we're going to be in Matthew chapter 3, 13 through 17. Go ahead and read it on the screen. So this morning, what does it look like for us then, maybe in this new year, to consent instead of resolute? So let's pick this up in verse 13. So it says, Jesus came from Galilee to John, so it's John the Baptist, his cousin, at the Jordan River, to be baptized by him. And then it says that, John would have prevented him saying, I need to be baptized by you, and you come to me. So I've always had this question, and John is asking the same question that I've always asked, and that commentators and theologians have asked for a long time. So if baptism at one level is a cleansing ceremony, which it is at one level, and if it's to cleanse us from sin, which some people define sin by behavioral immorality, I think sin is that, but to me, sin is, that's more the symptoms of core issues of sin, right? But if people think, if baptism is just to cleanse us from behavioral immorality, John is asking the question I would ask. If Christ lives this life without behavioral immorality, he's saying, well, I shouldn't be baptizing you, you should be baptizing me. He's like, no, I baptize you, no, you baptize me, right? So that's the conversation they're having. That's the question they're asking that I've actually asked for a long time. And I love how Matthew crafts this. He crafts the story in a meta way where Jesus's answer is actually showing us the deeper meaning of baptism. And then John's understanding and his action is showing that he's like, oh, in doing this, I understand what baptism means. So Jesus says, so he answered, this is maybe the deeper meaning of baptism. Let it be so. Just let it be so. Whatever it is, let it be so. For it is proper in this way to fulfill all righteousness. And then John goes, oh, okay, I'll let it be so. And then he consented. And what if baptism is showing us the deeper meaning? That maybe our role is to immerse ourselves in the consent of what God's already doing in our lives. So let's do a thought experiment. So think of the 10-year, like the version of yourself 10 years ago. Okay, so if you're 70, you're 60, if you're 60, you're 50. If you're 10 years old, just do the best you can. All right? So just picture yourself. So 10 years ago, where did you think your life would be today? So what were you picturing relationally? Would you be dating? Would you be engaged? Would you be married? Would your marriage be having struggles? Like 10 years ago, what were you imagining? Okay, now what did you imagine your career and vocation? What would be happening? Would you imagine you'd be unemployed? You'd be struggling with work? Right? Just picture all those things. Where would you be living? What would you be doing? Okay, you got a decent picture? Now think of the things that have gone better than you expected. Those probably exist, right? Some things, oh, that's surprising, right? I'm married, right? So think of the things that maybe have been failures or some crushed dreams. Those probably exist as well. Think of the things that are happening that you just don't understand, that are just confusing, okay? So imagine all of that, and what would it look like to be immersed in consenting to that? That I'm trusting that God's forming and crafting and growing, and I consent. A couple weeks ago, I did the classic take your parents to San Antonio trip. Have we all done that, right? It's like a classic move. So they wanted to go to the Riverwalk, and I have never been during Christmas, so I saw this picture, and it looks beautiful. I was like, oh, that's beautiful. Except I didn't know that the guy who took this picture either took it at 4:30 in the morning with nobody, or he somehow photoshopped all the people that were on the Riverwalk at that time out of the picture. So we got there, and it was like that. It was beautiful. But imagine the busiest place you've ever been. So like Tokyo or Hong Kong or like South By or I-35 on any given day. And then photoshop them into that picture. That's what we walked into. So we show up, we went to La Vita, which is kind of off the Riverwalk, and it was kind of nice. And we're like, oh, this is nice. And it's like a nice kind of place for parents, like brunch. And then in the distance, I heard a marching band. I was like, that's weird. So we all walk over, and then we look down into the Riverwalk, and I was like, wow, everyone's wearing bright orange on this side, and then everyone else is wearing gold and black. I wonder what's going on. And it turns out it was the day before the bowl game. And it was everyone from Oklahoma and Colorado descending. So it was like, boom, 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 marching band. At one point, I was walking through. They wanted to do the boat ride, the classic take your parents on the Riverwalk boat ride, right? And the marching band was so loud. There was a guy clanging like a cymbal in my face. There were like cheerleaders like pom-poms. There was a guy yelling into a mic so loud, the mic was crackling. I had like allergies. My head was all cloudy. So I had this surreal, like almost out of body moment. Like, I feel like I'm in a dream right now. There's like all these people yelling and chanting. I'm like, where am I? Right? So we get there, and then there's a long line for this boat, and our parents can't stand or walk for very long. So I was like, okay, you guys sit at a restaurant. I'll go line up. So if you go back to the picture, the line would have been from like that first bottom corner Texas flag tent up the bridge all the way around. So we're walking through, and I was like, hey, Noah, you want to come with me? He's like, what? Where am I going? I just grab him. And we're walking through, and then we're like, we're going to line up. He's like, what line? He's like, this line. So we're walking through. He's like, no, why? And I go, well, Grandma and Grandpa love the Riverwalk boat. He's like, what? Why would anyone? I was like, well, they're just into it. He's like, do you want to do it? I was like, no, not really. And then I go, but sometimes people you love and they love something and you can do it with them even if you don't enjoy it. You're like, what? That doesn't make sense. And then I go, you went to DreamHack, which is this video game conference. And I was like, I'm not really into video games, but I kind of enjoyed watching you enjoy it. He's like, whatever. And then I told him, and I had this moment. I was like, oh, okay, I'm going to teach him something. So the day before, I had talked to Waylon's brother-in-law, who's a therapist. And over dinner, we had this conversation, and he says, you know what the difference between pain and suffering is? He says, pain is just when you experience discomfort at varying degrees, and suffering is just your unwillingness to consent to the discomfort. I was like, So I go, Noah, hey, Noah. So this is not, this is a form of pain. We don't want to stand here, right? But we would be suffering if we don't consent to it. He's like, well, that doesn't make sense. So full disclosure, I bribed him. So I was like, hey, I'll make you a deal. And it was a sweet deal. Like, it was a pretty sweet deal. He's like, all right, deal. He's like, okay, so what are the parameters? I was like, you got to be engaged. You can't complain. And then you have to ask grandma and grandpa questions, like be fully engaged. He's like, all right. And he did amazing. We were on the boat and he's asking like, you know, what's the history of that building over there, grandma? Like, he was just killing it, knocking it out of the park. So at the end of it, I go, hey, how was it? He goes, it wasn't that bad. And I wanted to show him, he needed a little added incentive, but I needed to show him, if you're willing to consent to what's before you, it can actually fundamentally change the experience of what you're experiencing. And what would it look like for us in our lives? What are the things we think, ah, oh, would have, could have, should have? What are those things that we're just like, ah, if we're just willing to submit and immerse ourselves in consent? You know, I'm beginning to understand the beauty and importance of Mary more and more. And that's what Mary means. That's the icon of Mary. She represents for all humanity how to consent to grace. Hail Mary, full of grace. You know that story where Jesus is making more booze because they ran out of booze, right? And then what does he call his mom? Something you shouldn't call your mom. He calls her woman. But the meaning that is actually beautiful and profound, what this means, remember, this was written in an ancient patriarchal society. And what the writer was saying is that Mary as a woman is the archetype for all of humanity to show us how to consent to grace. That's what Mary means. One theologian says it like this, that God chose Mary, he chose her to love God into the world, to consent. Thomas Merton says it like this, you don't even need to know precisely what is happening or where it is all going. What you need to recognize is the possibilities and the challenges offered by the present moment. And then he says to embrace them, but today we'll say to consent to them with courage, faith, and hope. Look at this verse. If you change the word trust to consent, Jeremiah says this, blessed are those who consent in the Lord, whose consent is the Lord. If we just consent, we'll be like a tree planted by the water with roots going out by the stream. We'll be rooted and firm. It shall not, the tree won't fear when the heat comes. The leaves shall always stay green. And the year of drought is not anxious, does not cease to bear fruit. And what if we just consented to what God's already making and forming and sculpting? And so a question for us, maybe in our spiritual practices. So people ask, should I still do spiritual practices? I say, absolutely. They're really helpful. But as you're doing these spiritual practices, ask this question. Is your spiritual practices to foster control or consent? I think a lot of our spiritual practices are like, well, God, if I fast, if I learn these verses, if I give up this, it's like passive aggressive bartering. That's what we're doing, right? We're trying to control God. Or maybe our spiritual practices are to say, oh, these are the ways I'm still trying to control my life. What would it look like to immerse myself in consent? All right, let's pick up the story. So it says now, when Jesus has been baptized, so he goes in, so they're like, oh, yeah, I baptized you. No, he baptized me. And they're like, oh, fine, I consent. And he baptizes. So I want us to picture being there. So Jesus comes up from the water. So kind of, this is the Jordan River. Kind of, it could be Big Ben, right? And there's probably like a crowd forming, right? And then they John the Baptist already has a buzz. They kind of know he's kind of like the eco-friendly prophet. He wears like fur and is like vegan, organic. Actually, he's not vegan. He eats insects. And then Jesus, the cousin, they're like kind of like the new guy in the town. They're having like, I should baptize you. No, I should baptize you. I should baptize you. All right, consent. And then just picture being there, and then picture Jesus coming out of the water. Okay, so this is the missing piece that we often forget. Jesus was most likely naked. That for the first few hundred years, the church actually baptized people naked. So here's some depictions of Jesus. He seems to be missing like an important anatomy, but we'll just gloss over that. So there's quotes in 300 AD Cyril of Jerusalem. So when we baptize people here, we go, we baptize you in the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit. Cyril in Jerusalem, before he did that, he would say this. Oh, the wondrous thing. You were naked in the sight of all. Look at, everyone's looking at you and you're naked and you were not ashamed. Truly, you bore the image of the firstborn Adam who was naked in the garden and not ashamed. I baptize you in the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit. That was in 300 AD. In 400 AD, the Archbishop of Constantinople would say right before he baptized this person, in this you may know he enriches your nakedness with his grace. I baptize you. So this coming spring, I'm just kidding. But part of the meaning of baptism is to be rebirthed into our most basic essence, the beauty of that. And that's our truest essence. So let's try imagining this. What's the newest baby you've ever held? Picture. Well, most of us held babies before, some of us, right? Okay. So I remember when Jasper was born. I think it was a few hours. So they had a home birth, and it was a beautiful day, and we were sitting on the back porch. And I remember just holding him. So when you hold a brand new baby, what's the response? Like disappointment. Oh, come on. Should have tried harder, right? Should have set more goals, right? Isn't it amazing? For me, the experience goes like this. When I hold a new baby, it makes me feel small. Like the awe and the wonder of experiencing a new life for me is overwhelming. It really is. It's so beautiful, so profound. Like it makes me want to cry. I do cry. So now try imagining being in the room, observing the moment you were born. Just imagine that. So what year was it? For me, it was 1974. So people probably had like, you know, bell bottoms and big glasses, right? It was in this small little rural town in Canada, Saskatoon. It was February 6th. So it was probably like 40 below. It's in Canada, right? So imagine it being in the room. Who was there? You know, maybe your dad, maybe grandparents, maybe some relative, maybe a nurse. Okay, just picture. So the moment I was born, I had a challenging birth. I came out breech. So now they would just do a C-section. But back then, they're like, we can do this. So I was like, dude, I'm coming. So it was a hard birth. And just imagine that moment when they put you on your mom's chest or they gave you to your dad's arm. Look around the room. You see those smiles, you see that joy. That's how God has always seen you. That's the only way God sees you. And there's so many things that I think I need to be. My failures and my successes, the things I know, the things I don't know, the way I dress, the way I look, my taste. I think all those things are me. And I actually need to be cleansed of that because I'm missing the mark. I'm actually living in a way that's not actually me. As an adult, I need to be reborn and rebirthed into who I actually am. You know, Thomas Merton says, if we don't get it, because humanity, we have a hard time with that. He says, look at nature. He says, look at a tree. This is what he says. He says, a tree gives God, gives glory to God by being a tree. For in being what God means it to be, it is obeying him. It consents, so to speak, to his creative love. So we have this tradition in Austin around the holidays. So there's this iconic road with pine trees that people guerrilla decorate. And this road is called 360, right? So how many of you decorated trees on there? Yeah, some of you. So you've got some fancy trees, right? You've got, I think, a bumblebee tree. People turn water bottles into bumblebees. Then you've got the next one. I think you've got like Pac-Man. And the trees are like, oh, this is awesome. This is what I was missing. Like my whole life, I knew I just needed some Hello Kitty. And once I got it, right? And you got the next one with teddy bears. Okay, so go to the next slide. So imagine there's one more tree. So they're trying to get people to, if you decorate, it just becomes trash. So clean it up. So they're cleaning up this last tree. So what are the other trees experiencing? Or what do we imagine, right? Like the one tree on the left is like, the decorations are gone. Who am I, right? It's probably not, right? Or the tree to the right is like, I'm so embarrassed, right? I'm naked. Like, I think they're just like, well, finally, these human beings that project onto me that think I need all these decorations, finally, good riddance. And then Merton says it like this, which is so, so beautiful. This is what he says. He says, the pale flowers of the dogwood outside this window are saints. The little yellow flowers that nobody notices on the edge of that road are saints looking up into the face of God. This leaf has its own texture and its own pattern of veins and its own holy shape. The bass and the trout hiding in the deep pools of the river are canonized by their beauty and their strength. The lakes hidden among hills that no one even sees are saints. And the sea, too, is a saint who praises God without interruption in her majestic dance. The great gashed, half-naked mountain is another of God's saints. There is no other like him. He is alone in his character. Nothing else in the world ever did, will ever imitate God in quite the same way. That is his sanctity. Then he says this, for me to be a saint means to be myself. And for us, what would it look like? Not just to consent to God's craftsmanship and his artistry, but to consent to his vision for your life and for mine. And maybe a spiritual practice question here is this. Do our spiritual practices add new decorations? Because I think a lot of spiritual communities is like that, right? Well, I've been doing centering prayer for 4 hours this morning. Bing! I've read the book of the Bible 17 times, bling, right? Or do these practices actually detach us from these decorations? Oh, I actually don't. That's not who I actually am, what I look like, what I do, what I've achieved. Do our spiritual practices add new decorations, or do they detach us from our decorations? And then let's finish the story. And then it says this, then suddenly the heavens were opened and he saw the Spirit of God descending like a dove and alighting on him. And a voice from the heavens said, this is my son, the beloved, with whom I am well pleased. So what's the point of all this? Like, why do we need to consent to what God's already doing? Why? Well, why do we need to take away these decorations or degrees or, you know, what we look like? These things we're striving so hard to do. And maybe the point of all this is that the heavens are still opening. And God is always descending and has always been descending. And the truest voice of God is the one that whispers, you are my son, you are my daughter. You've always been my son, always been my daughter. You are worthy of love, and I'm actually proud of you. I'm pleased. And my prayer is that as we go into this new year, this all this striving and this decoration, we'll just take a deep breath and relax. And to hear that voice that is always whispering that. Rowan Williams, who's the Archbishop of the Anglican Church, he says it like this. So it's not surprising that as a church reflected on what baptism means, it came to view it as a restoration of what it is to be truly human. To be baptized is to recover the humanity that God first intended. What did God intend? He intended that human beings should grow into such love for him and such confidence in him that they could be rightly called God's sons and daughters, human beings. We've let go of that identity, abandoned it, forgotten it, or corrupted it. And when Jesus arrives on the scene, he restores humanity to where it should be. And so this morning, I want to close with another music video. It's going to be a two music video Sunday, which has never happened before. So on Dave Bazan's new album, my favorite song is The Trouble with Boys. And he wrote it for his teenage daughter. She's in middle school. And so he had written the song, and the song basically tells her that women in our society are taught that their value is in relation to men. Women. He wanted to tell her, his daughter, that that's not the case. So he wrote the song, and then they shot a video. And his friend, who's a filmmaker, they shot the video to use as a Kickstarter, and they were going to use the money to make a documentary about his life and his work. And so it was already done, completed. And then on his website, he tells a story of how he woke up the day after the election, and he had to tell his daughter, in his opinion, it felt like we had just voted in someone who demeans women, dehumanizes women, and given this person power. And he didn't know what he was going to tell his daughter. And he said this video that he had already shot, he didn't want to make money off it anymore, and he just released it that morning. And so for us this morning,
for us in this community who are women, who are told that that's what our value is and defined in relation to. For us fathers and mothers who have daughters, this song is so beautiful and amazing. And then for the rest of us, for the things that society tells us our value is in relation to, may we hear this song sung for us. So Vox, my prayer for us is as we begin this new year, that we'll hear that we've always been worthy of love. We will always be. You've never not been. And this is my prayer for us this morning. So Vox, blessed be the mind that dreamed the day the blueprint of your life would begin to glow on earth, illuminating all the faces and voices that arrive to invite your soul to growth. Praise be your mother and father who loved you before you were and trusted to call you here with no idea who you would be. Blessed be those who have loved you into becoming who you were meant to be. Blessed be those who have crossed your life with dark gifts of hurt and loss and have helped to school your mind in the art of disappointment. When desolation surrounded you, blessed be those who looked for you and found you with their kind hands, urgent to open a blue window in the gray wall formed around you. Blessed be the gifts you never notice, your health, eyes to behold the world, thoughts to countenance the unknown, memory to harvest the vanished days, your heart to feel the world's waves, your breath to breathe the nourishment of the distance made intimate by earth. And Vox, in this season of growing light, may be open to the gift of solitude in order to receive your soul. Enter the generosity of silence to hear your hidden heart and to know the serenity of stillness to be enfolded anew by the miracle of your being. In the name of the Father, of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit. Amen.